Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas! Have you been naughty or nice?
It was the night before Christmas.
Hello, and welcome to our December episodes.
Ooh.
Spooks.
It's spooky and it's chilly outside.
As you can tell from our current theme song, we're going to be doing Christmas theme all December long.
All December, you guys are getting Christmas. And if you don't celebrate Christmas, I'm sorry, but we do.
Yeah. So happy holidays.
So happy holidays to everybody.
Well, today I am actually going to be doing not necessarily a murder, but more of a mystery.
Ooh, mysterious.
And I am going to be talking about the Sodder family.
Yes. I know you guys probably know this one. This is a good one.
Yeah. So why don't we just jump right in?
Let's just do it.
So if anyone were to be driving down Route 16 near Fayetteville, West Virginia, from 1952 to early 1990s, you would have seen a billboard bearing coarse images of five dark-haired children, including their names and ages. Maurice, 14, Martha, 12, Louis, 9, Jenny, 8, and Betty, 5. Now, their faces were painted, and beneath that was speculation about exactly what happened to them.
Ooh.
Spooks. Now, before I get into exactly what happened with these children, I am actually going to do a little bit of background.
Gotta have background.
So, George Sodder was born Giorgio Sodu in Tula, Sardinia in 1895. Now, that is in Italy.
Yes.
And he immigrated to the United States in 1908 when he was only 13 years old.
Mm.
Now, he and his older brother were the ones that immigrated over. However, his older brother just decided that after Ellis Island, he wanted to immediately return back to Italy.
Ooh.
But he left George behind.
Aw, okay.
Now, George wanted this. He wanted to be on his own. He eventually grew up, found work on the Pennsylvania railroads, where he was carrying water and supplies to the laborers.
Cool.
After a few years, he then moved to Smithers, West Virginia, and he was kind of, I guess, described as very smart and ambitious, and he was one of the first drivers in that area, where then afterwards, he decided to launch his own trucking company.
Okay, I'll go get her.
A go-getter. Now, the trucking company that he started was just hauling dirt for construction, and then it later became a company where they were hauling, like, freight and coal,
mm-hmm.
which was very needed, obviously, in that time frame.
Oh, absolutely. They, like, ran off of coal.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, one day he walked into a local store called the Music Box, and this is where he met the owner's daughter named Jenny Caprani,
ooh.
Who had come over from Italy when she was just 3 years old.
Aww.
So they had something in common.
Yeah, that is common.
It's very rare, I mean, that you find somebody who also immigrated when they were young as well.
Yeah.
Well, they quickly fell in love, eventually married, and had 10 children.
Jesus.
I don't know how she like, managed Jesus. To do that. I dogs.
Vagina with power.
Well, they had 10 children between 1923 and 1943. So it took them 20 years to have all 10 of these children.
Okay.
They soon settled in Fayetteville, West Virginia, which is like an Appalachian town with a very small but like very active Italian community.
Hey, what up? I'm half Italian, so I feel this.
And the Sodders were very, I guess, well-known. They were described as one of the most respected middle-class families around.
Ooh.
However, the more children George had, the more careless George became. Now, he held very strong opinions about everything from business to even current events and politics. However, he was, for some reason, really hesitant to talk about his youth and his days while he was in Italy.
Oh.
He never wanted to talk about it.
Mysterious man.
He also never wanted to talk about the reason why he left Italy in the first place.
Okay.
In 1944, there was a stranger who appeared at their home back in the fall asking about hauling work. Mm. He just kind of, I guess, like sleuthed around the corner of their house and pointed to two separate fuse boxes and said, "This is going to cause a fire someday." Now, George thought that this was really strange because he had just had the wiring checked by the local power company, which pronounced it in fine condition. He also had the power company come back out and check, and they also said that it was still fine and stated that it was just probably some guy creating issues to make some money, you know?
Yeah, like, oh, your wiring's messed up? Like, can I fix that? And then,
yeah.
I can see it. Okay. Yeah.
Now, the reason why George thought this was strange and had the wire checked by a local power company already was because he was getting a stove put in, an electric stove. And of course, you have to check the wiring to set up your stove.
Yeah.
Now, in 1945, so about a year later, another man tried to sell the family life insurance and became very, like, irritated when George decided to decline the offer.
So a random guy came up and was like, "Here's life insurance."
Yeah, kind of like a salesman, like door-to-door salesman. Mm-hmm. Now, this salesman, however, decided to state, and I quote, "Your goddamn house is going up in smoke, and your children are going to be destroyed. You are going to be paid for the dirty remarks you have been making about Mussolini."
That doesn't sound like a salesman. That sounds like an Italian mobster.
No. No, not at all. Because George was already very, I guess, aggressive in the way that he talked, and he was from Italy, he had very strong opinions about Mussolini. So this sparked a little bit of concern, especially looking back to the events that are about to unfold very quickly.
Yeah. I would say.
And George also talked about his dislike for the Italian dictator. He also engaged in heated arguments with other members of the Italian community in Fayetteville.
That's never good. I mean, politics can get anybody crazy. I think in 2020, we've realized that full on. And back in the 40s, I don't think it's much different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Now, the older Sauter sons also recalled something kind of weird. Just before Christmas, they noticed a man parked along Highway 21 just watching younger children as they were coming home from school.
So watching the Sauter children come home from school?
Just children in general, but it was the same school that the Sauter children were attending.
That's creepy.
Yeah. Now we're going to kind of jump to Christmas Eve of 1945. Now keep all of those events in your mind while I'm going to talk about Christmas Eve. Now, Marianne, who was the oldest sister of the 10 children, decided that she wanted to give presents to the youngest 5 children early. Now, Maurice, Martha, Louis, Jenny, and Betty, remember those names on the billboard, they all decided to stay up late and play. However, their mom decided to tell them that they needed to turn the lights off, lock the doors, and go to bed before Christmas morning.
I can understand the excitement. They want to play with their new toys, and their mom's all like, okay, we'll let you go to, you know, we'll let you play, but, like, make sure to close it all up.
Yeah.
I can see
exactly.
It.
Yeah. You don't want to ruin Santa for them either. So if the children are up all night, like, when's Santa getting there? Around 12:30 Christmas morning, after the children, of course, opened their presents and everyone had gone to sleep, the telephone decided to ring and it woke the mom, Jenny, up. Now, while she answered it, an unfamiliar female voice asked for an unfamiliar name. Mm. There was laughter and glasses clinking in the background. However, Jenny stated, "You have the wrong number." Now, this woman just laughed nervously and decided to hang up. So Jenny decided to kind of tiptoe back into bed when she noticed that all of the downstairs lights were still on and the curtains were still open. The front door was also unlocked. Now, she was very irritated because she had told her children to do all of that before they went to bed.
Yes.
And they did not. So she also saw that Marion was asleep on the sofa and just assumed that the other kids were upstairs in bed. She turned out the lights, closed the curtains, locked the door, and then, of course, returned to her room so she can finally get some sleep. As she began to kind of doze off around 1:30 in the morning, she heard one loud, sharp bang on the roof and then noticed a rolling noise. Now, she just thought that this might have been a rock hitting the roof and then rolling off. However, an hour later, she was then woken up again, and this time it was because of heavy smoke coming into their room, and a fire broke out into the office room, which woke George up, and they both panicked for their children.
I'm panicked.
Shook. As the house fire was growing and spreading, it was going even faster than usual because their house was made from a timber frame, which is very dangerous because the structure of the house burns and it puts the whole house at risk very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, a wood house catching on fire is probably the worst house to catch on fire.
Yeah, like, exactly. Now, once they made it out, they also realized that not all of the children were outside. George had tried to go back to save them. He even broke a window to re-enter the house. He sliced a huge piece of his forearm, and he couldn't see anything through the smoke and fire, which then just kept going and going and going. He also couldn't see anything besides the kitchen supplies that were kind of shining in the fire. And every chance he took to get into that house, the heat was just pushing him back outside.
Yeah. I mean, jumping into a hot fire isn't normal.
Exactly. Like, yeah. Your body is
that's hard
like,
to do.
No.
Your body's like, get me out.
Now, while he was outside, he kind of realized that he had his 2-year-old daughter, whose name was Sylvia, and their other daughter, Marion, who was the oldest daughter, of course, sleeping on the couch. She was also outside, as well as their 2 sons, who were 23-year-old John and 16-year-old George Jr. He figured that Maurice, Martha, Louis, Jenny, and Betty still had to be upstairs, cowering in their 2 bedrooms on either end of the hallway that was separated by a staircase that was now engulfed in flames.
Oh, that's fucked.
He, of course, just kept hoping to reach them, but he decided to try and grab a ladder so he can climb upstairs. Mm-hmm. But the ladder that was always propped against a house in the same position, never moved, it was suddenly missing.
I don't like it.
I know. Now, George also had a second idea where he would drive one of his 2 coal trucks up to the house so he can climb on top of it to reach the windows. Now, even though they were just working fine the day before, neither of them would now start.
That's bizarre as fuck.
He also tried thinking of a third option where he was scooping out water from a rain barrel. But of course, it was frozen solid.
Oh, this is sad.
I know. 5 of his children were stuck somewhere inside the like huge gaping hole of fire and smoke.
Yeah.
And he couldn't do anything to save them.
That's horrible.
Yeah. All George claims that he remembers from that time was that he didn't even realize that his arm was covered in blood from trying to reach in. And all he remembers was that his voice hurt from screaming their names.
Oh,
I know.
No, that's fucking sad.
While the fire was going on, his daughter Marion decided to sprint to a neighbor's home to call the fire department. But while they were calling, she couldn't get any operator response.
That's fucking weird.
Now, unknown to them, another neighbor also saw the fire and made a call from a nearby tavern, but again, no operator responded. I get it, it's Christmas Eve, but at the same time, like,
there should be 24-hour firefighters.
Yeah, do your job.
I mean, that's a... Fires don't just stop on Christmas, yeah. Y'all.
It's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm taking a holiday.
No fires today.
Yeah, no fires today. It's a holiday. I'm taking a holiday. There was also another neighbor who decided to just drive into town to track down the fire chief. So Shout out to that neighbor.
Yeah, that's
good for you. This fire chief at the time decided to do a phone tree system where one firefighter phoned another, who then, of course, phoned another. I mean, we all know the telephone game. Mm-hmm. That is how they decided to tell the whole entire fire station, which by that point was told that the house was already pretty much dust.
Ugh.
They didn't arrive until 9 a.m. the next morning.
That's... unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
What?
And what's even more unacceptable is that the fire department was only 2.5 miles away from the house.
What?
Now, at first, George and Jenny just assumed that, you know, five of their children were dead in the fire. But a brief search of the grounds on Christmas Day turned up no trace of human remains.
Huh?
Now, the fire chief, his name was Chief Morris, suggested that the blaze might have just been hot enough to completely cremate the bodies. A police inspector also kind of combed through the rubble and stated that the fire was from faulty wiring. Mm. George covered the basement with 5 feet of dirt because he wanted to preserve the site as a memorial.
Aww.
I know. Now, the coroner's office also issued 5 death certificates just before the new year, attributing to the cause of fire or suffocation.
Okay.
Now, the Sauter family, knowing that there was no remains found, decided, I don't think the children are dead. I think they're still alive and maybe something else happened.
Yeah.
Now we're going to get into that story.
Oh.
The spooks. Now, on December 26th, this is 2 days after the fire happened, there was already press reportings from Beckley Raley Registered News that reported that there were remains of 5 children found. However, that was, of course, false.
I wonder why they lied.
Yeah. Now, people also began to wonder how the fire even started at all because, of course, the police stated that it was faulty wiring, but that was only because the fire started in the same area as where the wiring box was mm-hmm. with the fuse box. So they thought that it was just a coincidence and that's where the faulty wiring was.
Yeah.
Now, John Sauter, who was one of the children who actually survived the fire, he stated, "Mother and father went to bed about 10:30 p.m. We went to sleep upstairs around 11:15 or 11:30. We had everything ready for Christmas. There was a set of Christmas lights in the window of mother's bedroom. Now George Jr. woke me up and I came down expecting to help out with the fire. When I got to the door, flames were already there and I couldn't get back. Fire had swept from the place where the desk was to the front door. George had started trying to wake the others, but I guess they either didn't wake up or didn't move fast enough. I think somebody set the fire."
Mm.
Now, of course, Mrs. Sauter and the others believe that the fire was also set, so they decided to launch an investigation to help. She told police all of the weird things that happened, you know, the events leading up to the fire. However, the officers just decided to ignore and stated that it was, again, faulty wiring.
It's not fair. 2 people literally said your house is going to catch on fire before this.
Yeah.
And then 1 person literally said your kids will be destroyed.
Yes.
That seems sus.
But it's faulty wiring.
But faulty wiring.
And again, Beckley Raley News pointed out an unusual fact that not only could the family couldn't find the ladder that was outside of the home, the ladders that were inside of the home were also missing.
That's Crazy.
Yeah. Of course, the family asked for a better investigation, so they wanted somebody to search the home again, and yet still no remains were found. Now, Jenny couldn't really understand how her five children could just perish in the fire and leave no trace of bone, flesh, clothing, absolutely nothing. She also conducted a private experiment, and this is where it kind of gets a little weird, but I guess as a mom, I would probably do this too. She started burning animal bones. Mm. So there was chicken bones, beef, pork, literally any animal that had died where she could get her hands, and she set them on fire to see how those bones were consumed.
Okay, makes sense.
Now, each time she was left with a heap of just charred bones, she knew that the remains were there, and you can still kind of tell what they were, so mm-hmm. she still didn't understand how there was no bones available, you know, to the investigation for her children.
Not even, like, a fragment.
Yeah, nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Weird. That is weird.
She also remembered that various other household appliances had also been found in the burned out basement, which were still identifiable. So if there's appliances, like, why isn't there any human remains?
Yeah. Okay.
She also talked to an employee at a crematorium, which then informed her that if a body is burned for 2 hours at 2,000 degrees, there will still be bones remaining. Now, to kind of put this into more perspective, an average house fire will usually burn at a temperature somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Although, of course, there's other factors that you kind of have to throw in. Their house was destroyed in 45 minutes.
Fuck.
So if remains are still available to be found after 2 hours at 2,000 degrees... why is there no remains after 45 minutes?
That's literally the million dollar question that can't be answered.
Yeah.
That's fucked.
Now, of course, with this, there was two other questions that were kind of being brought up. They were wondering if their house was burning hotter than 2,000 degrees or if age even was a factor in it.
Mm-hmm.
So Children's Healthcare of Atlanta stated that adult bones are harder and brittle, which are most likely to break than bend. They're also more developed than children's bones. So a child's bones were to be more flexible, and that's because the chemical, like, composition is, of course, different than adult bones. So could that mean that a child's bones just burn faster?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the speculation.
Mm-hmm. They also decided to factor in weight because, of course, body fat burns faster. However, the children were kind of super skinny, so yeah. I don't think that was a factor at all.
Yeah, it couldn't be a factor to why there's no remains.
Yeah, exactly. And we will definitely post the photos, of course, on our Instagram, and you can kind of think of that for yourself. Now, other investigations were also launched, and a couple of other, like, odd moments were found. So, a telephone repairman also told the Sodders that their lines appeared to have been cut and not burned.
Ooh.
They realized that if the fire had been electrical, the result of faulty wiring, as, of course, the official report stated... then their power would have been dead. So how does that explain the lighted downstairs room?
Like the power would have went off before the fire started.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, because it would have caused the fire. It doesn't make sense. There was also other witnesses that were watching the fire that also stated that they saw the lights on as the fire was burning the house down.
Whoa.
Yeah. Another witness came forward claiming that he saw a man at the fire scene taking a block and tackle, which was used for removing car engines.
Yeah.
And could that have been the reason why George's trucks just refused to start?
I don't know. People are saying a lot of things.
Another odd moment was when the family was visiting the site. Sylvia is the youngest child. She found a hard rubber object in the yard. And this is where Jenny recalled hearing the hard thud of the roof.
Ooh.
Could that have been it? Because George concluded that it was actually a napalm pineapple bomb.
Whoa.
Of the type used in warfare.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay, that's odd.
A bus driver also came forward and stated that the night of the fire, he also saw fireballs being thrown onto the roof of the Sauter family's home.
Why didn't this guy call the police?
I
know you don't know the answer, but like, if I saw fireballs getting thrown at a building, I would be like, huh, neat.
Yeah.
And like,
neato. And then neato. Keep going on to their like bus driver
bus
stops.
Driving like, needs.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't know. I don't know. But this also raises the question of like, was this what like Jenny heard? You know, that
I mean,
thud?
Hearing a thud and a roll sounds like a ball.
Like a napalm.
It sounds like, I've never been near a napalm, but it sounds dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, there was also reports of burglaries in the area, and two teenage men were caught stealing from the Sauter family home.
Ooh.
They were later arrested and questioned. However, they admitted to stealing a ladder outside, but they did not set the fire.
That's an odd coincidence.
Yeah. The same night.
Yeah.
The same fucking night.
Why would you steal from a house on Christmas?
No. Just a ladder. Just a ladder. Mm-hmm. Nothing else. Now, other strange things also began to pop up throughout the years, some of which were reporting of sightings of the Sauter children. Now, a woman claimed to have seen the children peering from a passing car while the fire was in progress, but they were not struggling, and she stated that there might have been, you know, asleep. I don't know. It could have just been like smoke inhalation too, and just yeah. They were passed out. Well, she swore up and down that it was the Sauter family,
yeah.
And she decided to call a year after the fire.
I hate everybody.
A woman operating a tourist stop between Fayetteville and Charleston, some like 50 miles west of their home, also stated that she saw the children the morning after the fire, and I quote, "I served them breakfast. There was also a car with Florida license plates at the tourist stop, too," end quote. Now, a woman at a Charleston hotel also stated that she saw the children's photos in the newspaper and had seen 4 out of the 5 a week after the fire. Scary. This woman also stated, quote, "The children were accompanied by 2 women and 2 men, all of Italian extraction," end quote. She also said, quote, "I do not remember the exact date. However, the entire party did register at the hotel and stayed in a large room with several beds. They registered at around midnight, and I tried to talk to the children in a friendly manner, but the men appeared very hostile and refused to allow me to talk to these children. One of the men then looked at me very rudely. He turned around and began talking rapidly in Italian.
Whoa.
Immediately, the whole party stopped talking to me, and I sensed that I was being frozen out, so I said nothing more. They then left early the next morning," end quote.
Ooh.
Now, multiple experts also stated that, again, they still can't believe that the children just died in a fire. But there was just lack of evidence stating otherwise.
Yeah.
George and Jenny still think that they were taken.
Yeah.
Now, George later on saw a photo of a girl who he thought was one of his daughters that died in the fire.
Ooh.
He took himself all the way to New York City to speak with this girl, but the family did not allow him to enter their home or even talk to anyone in their family.
Well, I can see that point.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense as a family, right?
Yeah, I'd be like, who's this creepy guy?
Yeah. Now, there is an investigator that tried to explain why George decided to make this trip, like the reasons behind it. Because at this time, there was a general market for human trafficking, and it wasn't really widely known,
mm-hmm.
but George knew of.
Mm.
Now, children around the time were being sold for $1,000, so that's in 1945. That amounts to $14,500 today.
Damn.
And these people were you know, trafficking children to avoid, like, adoption agencies because maybe they couldn't pass the checks or maybe it was taking too long.
Okay.
So, of course, George just thought that maybe his children were human trafficked.
I mean, if you're dealing with Italians and if there is any type of mob ties or anything like that, I feel it.
Yeah, exactly. Investigators also stated that there was a possibility that somebody met the children on Christmas Eve and told them a story of how they were going to get a lot of Christmas gifts and that they had to come to the window later that night, which then explains how the children left their homes without a fight.
That makes sense, but also a stretch, kind of.
Yeah. There was questions as to why they would stay away from their family so long if that was the case.
Yeah.
However, investigators also stated that perhaps they were shown a photo of, like, the ruins of the house, all burnt down, stating that their family was no longer living.
That's fucked.
And they had nowhere else to go.
Oh.
So as a child, I mean.
Yeah, comply.
Yeah, right? You don't know otherwise. Now, going back to what the fire chief had stated, everyone who was on scene at the fire also mentioned that they did not smell any burning flesh.
Which is, I mean, five burning children.
You're going to smell that.
Something, especially in a house like theirs that might have been big but not huge.
Yeah.
That's an undeniable fragrance.
Right? Exactly. This fire chief also stated that it was one of the worst fires that he's ever seen.
Oh,
that's how big the flames were. So then he started thinking, well, maybe the children were taken.
Ooh.
Private investigators stated that there was definitely ample time for somebody to climb up the side of the house and take the children before the fire was untamable.
Damn.
They eventually decided that it was still faulty wiring. Even after. Of course, George and Jenny, they just want the truth. And they also stated that the fire was not properly investigated and that the conclusions were just reached far too quickly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In 1947, so about 2 years after the fire, George and Jenny sent a letter about the case to the FBI.
Ooh.
And they received a reply from the FBI director stating, quote, "Although I would love to be of service, the matter related appears to be of local character and does not come within the investigative jurisdiction of this bureau," end quote.
So he was basically saying it's not important enough for me to even.
Yes. However, it was later on found that his agents needed, I guess, permission from the local authorities because it's not his jurisdiction.
Absolutely, yeah.
And of course, the fire department and the police department denied the FBI's help.
Whoa!
Yeah. After the failure of the FBI, trying to claim the investigation, of course, the Sodders turned to another private investigator named C.C. Tinsley. Mm. He discovered that the insurance salesman who had threatened George earlier was a member of the coroner's jury deemed the fire accidental.
Oh, my body just shook. Yes. He wasn't even a salesperson. I have a good feeling that the Italian mafia is involved in the police and in the jurisdiction.
Oh, for sure. You know the mafia controls the shit out of that. Tinsley also heard a curious story from a minister about the fire chief. Now, although, you know, the fire chief had claimed that there was no remains found, he supposedly confided that he discovered a heart in the ashes, but he hid it inside, like, a dynamite box and buried it at the scene.
Wait, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. Now, of course, the private investigator persuaded the fire chief to show him the spot where he had, you know, dug and buried that box. And they dug it up together, took it straight to the local funeral director, who poked and prodded the heart and concluded that it was actually beef liver.
Oh.
And it was untouched by the fire. Hmm. So they think that he just went in and wanted to have, like, an answer for the family and buried a thing so that way he could find it, in air quotes, to let them know that there is remains found.
Whoa, that's shady as hell.
Yes.
And a liver, like, an okay, out of everything, an organ, wouldn't it be leftover bones?
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, what
of,
the fuck?
Of anything.
Of anything, it was an organ, that's yeah. that's not okay.
Yeah, he just hoped that finding any remains would kind of just give the family enough peace of mind to stop investigating.
Ugh.
In August of 1949, the Sodders decided to mount a new search at the fire scene and brought in Washington, D.C. pathologist named Oscar B. Hunter. Mm. They decided to excavate the whole house, uncovering several small objects like damaged coins, partly burned dictionaries, and several shards of vertebrae.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Mm? Now, this pathologist sent the bones over to the Smithsonian Institution, which issued the following report, and I quote, "The human bones consist of four lumbar vertebrae belonging to one individual. Since the transverse recesses are fused, meaning the bones are fused, the age of this individual at death would have been 16 or 17 years old.
Whoa.
The top limit of age should be about 22, since the center is normally fused at 23, and it was still unfused. So that's how they knew that it was a young child. On the basis, the bone showed greater skeletal maturation that one would expect for a 14-year-old boy, which was the oldest missing Sodder child.
Oh.
So they decided that this was not any of the Sodder children.
What?
And the remains were not charred, and they figured that somebody put it inside of the dirt pile, of which George put on top of the basement, as a memorial.
That's disturbing. Now we have a murder on our hands or something like that. What the fuck?
Now, none of this was even investigated, which I thought was even more strange, and nothing came of it.
Mm.
Now, because the Smithsonian report prompted like two different, I guess, verdicts of what happened, they just decided to close the case instead of investigating it.
Ugh. Opposite of what you should do.
I know, right? Now, George and Jenny, of course, did not give up hope, and instead they erected that billboard alongside Route 16 and passed out flyers offering a $5,000 reward for information leading to the recovery of their children.
Yeah.
This billboard had pictures of the Sodder children, including one extra photo of Lewis, who was 9 at the time of the fire, of how he might have looked at age 31.
Whoa.
It also stated, "After 30 years, it is not too late to investigate. On Christmas Eve, 1945, our home was set afire and 5 of our children, ages 5 through 14, were kidnapped. The officials blamed defective wiring, although lights were still burning after the fire started. The official report stated that the children died in the fire. However, no bones were found in the residue and there was no smell of burning flesh during or after the fire. What was the motive of the law officers involved? What did they have to gain by making us suffer all these years of injustice? Why did they lie and force us to accept those lies?" End quote.
Whoa.
That's intense.
That is intense.
They're all,
that's
they're
a
like,
lot to put on a billboard.
Yeah. They're like questioning the officer's like integrity almost.
They should be.
Yeah.
I would. It's my kid. I'd be like, dude, your integrity is flawed.
Mm-hmm.
Because those investigators that go out there and they're just like, we're going to do nothing but find your kid.
Yeah.
Those are the rock stars. But this person, no.
This person was like, faulty wiring, next case.
Yeah, exactly.
Bye. Now, they also increased the reward amount from $5,000 to $10,000. There was a letter that arrived from a woman in St. Louis stating that the oldest girl, Martha, was in a convent there. Another tip came from Texas, where a patron in a bar overheard like an incriminating conversation about a long ago Christmas Eve fire in West Virginia.
Whoa.
Someone in Florida claimed the children were staying with a distant relative of Jenny's.
Hmm.
Now, George, of course, traveled the country to investigate each of these leads, always returning home without any answers.
Oh, no.
I know. Colby Vickers, which was the prosecuting attorney of Fayetteville, stated that it was not enough evidence to conclude faulty wiring, nor was there evidence to conclude it was kidnapping. No one wanted this case and did not want to take the time or resources to solve it.
That's so sad.
The chief also stated that the family was too invested and just wanted it to be true, no matter what kind of hope that they held on to with their children being alive.
I can see both sides.
Yeah. Ugh. In 1968, so more than 20 years after the fire, Jenny went to go get the mail and found an envelope addressed to her own name. It was postmarked in Kentucky, but had no return address. Mm. Inside was a photo of a man in his early 30s. Mm. On its flip side, it also had a very, like, cryptic handwritten note saying, "Lewis Sauter, I love brother Frankie, low boys, A90132 or 35, end quote.
What the fuck does that mean?
I have no idea, and neither did Jenny or George, but they couldn't deny, like, the resemblance to Lewis, who, again, was 9.
Yeah.
And that photo was the same photo that they used as Lewis potentially looking like 32.
Wow.
They had the same straight, strong nose, the same upward tilt of the left eyebrow, dark brown eyes, and dark curly hair.
Ugh.
Once again, they hired another private detective and sent him to Kentucky, which he was then never heard from again.
Shut the fuck up.
No, I'm not going to shut up. This is a case.
Very weird right now. I feel really weird.
The Sauters feared that if they published the letter or the name of the town on the postmark, that they might harm their son. So instead, they just amended the billboard to include the updated photo, of course, of Lewis. And George gave an interview stating that time is running out for them.
Oh.
He also stated, quote, "We only want to know. If they did die in the fire, we want to be convinced. Otherwise, we want to know what happened to them."
Oh, God.
My heart. After that interview, a year later, so we're now in 1968, George passed away.
Oh, no.
He passed away with the hope of breaking the case.
Oh, of course.
I know. Now, Jenny decided to build a fence around her property because she was scared of the impact of what was going to happen. And now that she's alone, she didn't want her house to be set afire again.
Dude. That makes me so sad.
Since the fire, she only wore black as a sign of mourning and continued to do so until her own death in 1989.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Okay.
Sad.
Yeah.
The billboard finally came down in 1993.
What?
And her children and grandchildren continued the investigation and still came up with theories of their own. They also had a theory that the local mafia tried to recruit George, and when he declined, they did this to retaliate.
Oh.
The children were also stated to be kidnapped by someone that they knew. Someone who's burst into the unlocked front door, told them about the fire, and offered to take them someplace safe.
Ooh, that is compelling.
Mm-hmm. Now, they still aren't sure whether or not, even if they were kidnapped, had they have survived the night, regardless of who took them.
No.
Now, if they had, and they had lived for decades, if it really was Lewis in that photograph, they failed to contact their parents only because they wanted to protect their parents.
Oh, sad.
Yeah. Now, the youngest and last surviving Sauter child, which is Sylvia, mm-hmm. is now 69.
Oh, my gosh.
And doesn't believe that her siblings perished in the fire. Now, she still visits her old home.
Yeah.
And she also goes on websites and just engages with people who are still interested in her family's mystery. Her very first memories are of that night in 1945, where she was 2 years old. And she will never forget the sight of her father bleeding or the terrible symphony of everyone's screams.
Oh.
And she still is no closer to finding out what happened to her family.
So sad.
I know.
That's really sad.
Well, that's all I had for you today.
Oh, God, that case is like, there's definitely a very chilling aspect of this case, mm-hmm. because those unsolved mysteries that have so much bizarre shit going on, those are haunting.
Yeah.
Like, that shit makes me feel weird.
It's kind of like,
I don't feel good about it.
There's so many things that could make this into, like, a mystery, and then there's other things that's like, what if they actually did pass away in the fire? Because we don't know how hot the fire was burning, even though evidence and science kind of tells you, no, there's going to be bones. Not. Yeah. I don't know.
That's weird.
Well.
I feel uncomfortable. Good night.
You're welcome. Merry Christmas.
Uncomfortable Christmas time. Time to feel uncomfortable on Christmas. No, but all seriousness, this case is fucking sad.